Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Thanks for coming by. This is Renee. This is Renee's Heart to Heart. We're going to talk a little bit this morning about insomnia, something that I have experienced every now and then in my lifetime, but we're going to talk about why you experience it once in a while and why how you can actually be afflicted with things like insomnia. It's different if you just have it every now and then as compared to some people like this man that I read about named Al Herpin. And he was called the man that never slept. He was born in 1853 in New Jersey, and he claimed to have developed a rare disease called insomnia, whereby he could not sleep. They even went to medical professionals and different people went to visit him in his home, and he had no bed or no other sleep-related furniture, only a rocking chair. And he said he would, after a long day at work, he would sit in the rocking chair and rock and read the newspaper until dawn. Then he would get up and go back to work. The strange part about somebody who's sleep deprived, we've learned through the years that sleep deprivation is incredibly harmful to the body. This man, however, was healthy. He had a constant level of high awareness, and he just did not require any sleep. And it was strange. He lived to be 94 years old. Can you imagine? And never sleep, no sleep, just resting. There's pictures of him online, and there's been other people who could live on a fraction of sleep. Margaret Thatcher was known to have not gotten a lot of sleep, and Edison also. Margaret would get by on 4 hours of sleep during her time in a role of leadership, and they said that Thomas Edison required very, very, very short amounts of sleep. That's why he, the way the story goes, that's why he invented the light bulb, because he would be awake at night and, excuse me, wanted to read. So very interesting that all of those things have happened to other people. And, of course, you talk to people every day today, I'm sure, especially older people, who can get by on 4 hours of sleep easily. I know a lot of people who don't sleep much more than 4 hours a night, but most of them are retired and they can nap in the day. So long stretches of sleep are what is, that's the most sought after, to be able to fall asleep and sleep soundly for 6 to 8 hours is what people think that they want. And there's some interesting controversy in regard to that, as far as whether you really need it or not. It's a lot of times people think they have insomnia simply because they're not sleeping as much as they'd like to. So we're going to discuss that. I'm going to bring Shelley in. Good morning, Miss Shelley.
Well, good morning, Renee.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm good. On my way into work.
Okay, well, good. How many hours of sleep did you get last night?
Not as many as I should have, I can tell you that much. I generally, not because of insomnia, but it's just because of my nutty schedule right now, I'll get anywhere from generally 5 to 7 hours. When I only get 5 hours, though, I do feel it during the day. I can force myself to get up and get going, and I'll be alert enough, but it kind of backlashes on me. At a certain part during the day, all of a sudden, I'll just get very fatigued. So 6 or 7 actually work best for me. I don't generally need a full 8 hours, but anything less than 6, and I do feel it. I've actually gotten up and gone on 3 or 4 hours sleep, but like I said, it does backlash. And I think, am insomnia where you can't fall asleep? I don't know that. Is there any insomnia condition where people can't stay asleep, like they can fall asleep but then they continually wake up? Is that also considered insomnia?
Yes.
I always thought
as a matter of fact, that's what I found out when I started researching. I'm gonna explain that to everybody because it is very interesting that there are actually three types of insomnia. And the first one, the first one is called transient insomnia, and it lasts for less than a week usually, and it's usually caused by a disorder, either changing your sleep environment or trying to work a different schedule at work, often severe depression or stress. There are obvious reasons, and I think most of us can analyze that ourselves. I think most of us know if we're going through an upsetting time, and or people who move. What about people who move from state to state and change time zones, or country to country and really change their time zone? They go through what they call transient insomnia. But then you have acute insomnia, and it's the inability to consistently sleep well for a period of less than a month. Insomnia is present when there is difficulty initiating and maintaining sleep, or when the sleep that is obtained is non-refreshing or of poor quality. These problems occur despite adequate opportunity and circumstances for sleep, and they must result in problems with daytime function. Acute insomnia is also known as short-term insomnia or stress-related insomnia. So all the different insomnias, like I said, there's three that they have actually analyzed, are very similar. It's just a matter of how much time is involved. But all of them, including chronic, which means repetitive insomnia, is attributed to, you know, what's going on in your life almost always. They seldom find a health reason other than, and I'm going to bring this up because we've talked about this before, sleep apnea often causes insomnia unless you figure out that that's what's wrong. You actually wake yourself up because you can't breathe with problems with your breathing and things like that. You have to be aware of what's going on. And I know a lot of people who've been fitted with the breathing apparatus, they overcome that so that they get a better night's sleep and they don't wake up with headaches and things like that. But the scary part about chronic insomnia can affect all of us in our daily life. And usually lasts longer than a month. And, well, the people that I just read about, a lot of times, and we know this about ourselves, we can teach ourselves to deal with something that is not, for the sake of a different word, normal. What everybody else is doing sometimes doesn't suit us. Sometimes you can thrive and be perfectly fine on 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night. It depends on what kind of makeup you have. But to make yourself sick with your mind because you think you're supposed to sleep 6 to 8 hours is one of the things that they caution you about when you read all of these different articles. If you're sleeping different than somebody else, your husband, your best friend, all the girls have gotten together and talked about how much they all sleep, and you build your sleep patterns to try to fit theirs, that's a mistake. Psychologically speaking, that can do more harm to you than good, because if you're functioning all right, then maybe that's all your body requires. Now, here's some of the things, though, that can happen if you really are an insomniac and you are really suffering from not having enough sleep. First of all, the people with high levels of stress hormones or shifts in the levels of cytokines. Cytokines are like a hormone, but they kind of attack your cells, and they can cause worse imbalance in your system than an imbalance in your hormones. It effects can vary according to its causes. They might include muscular fatigue, hallucinations, and or mental fatigue. Some people that live with this disorder sort or see things as if they are happening in slow motion, wherein moving objects seem to blend together. Chronic insomnia can actually cause double vision. So one of the things that they suggest is one of those sleep clinics. If you really are concerned, you're really having problems, you think you're trying, and you're trying to function during the day, and you can't. And, I mean, I've met people, I know people, that if they become immobile for any length of time and they're like listening to a lecture, something that, where they don't have to stay physically busy in any way, they nod off and fall asleep because they're not getting enough sleep at night. Now, there's different names for that. There's narcolepsy and things like that that happen to people when they can just fall asleep in the middle of anything. But I know people who, because their sleep pattern is so bad at night, that unless they stay active during the day, they actually will nod off for minutes at a time.
Right.
If those kind of things are occurring to you, you should go see somebody and go to one of the sleep clinics where they can actually monitor and see what's going on. A lot of people, that's how they find out they have sleep apnea. If you don't sleep with somebody else that can tell you, you know, that you keep awake or something, then a lot of times you can go through your whole life and not realize that, you know, that maybe there is something wrong with your sleep pattern. Restless leg syndrome and the sleep apnea and major depressions are real fodder for poor sleep quality. Really, really can mess you up. And if you're suffering from major depression, and we know about this, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis causes a dysfunction in that. And it releases extra cortisol, which can lead to poor sleep quality. So there's lots of things that you have to be on the lookout for, and there's lots of things that you have to, if you think that you're suffering from it, again, every article that I read, instead of trying to do self-diagnosis, talks about going in and having a, where you just go in and they plug you all into everything to monitor everything that's going on, and you try to sleep. And they can find out a lot of things that are going on with you. The restless leg syndrome can cause insomnia because you try to get comfortable, and then pretty soon you go past your sleepy stage and you're awake half the night. There's women during menstruation and during menopause often can become insomniacs because of the hormone shifts that are going on, the cortisol that's being released, the hormones, everything gets all messed up because it's trying to go through what you might call the third cycle of your life as far as your female organs are concerned, and it's making all those arrangements, so to speak, in your body to let, you know, to have your menstrual cycle stop, discontinue. So when that happens, the different hormones and the cortisol and everything is trying to figure out what it's supposed to be doing. And that can cause major sleep problems, major, major sleep problems. And, of course, there's pain due to bad backs or people who go to bed, eat just before you go to bed and wake up with heartburn or all of a sudden have to go to the bathroom. And mental disorders such as bipolar, anxiety, PTSD, schizophrenia, obsessive compulsive disorder, and dementia, or even ADHD, can really enter into a sleep pattern of anyone, even a child. So it gets very deep. Goes into medical conditions such as hyperthyroidism and rheumatoid arthritis, and it talks about the consumption of caffeine, and it also talks about whether you go to bed in a room that is conducive to sleep. Because if you have a disorder like this and you're not going into a room that's completely dark, that has no noise, that is climatized to suit your liking, in other words, not too cold, not too hot, no outside noise, no television on, no any kind of internet or anything, and no lights blinking for some people. I have night lights on in my room, all over my room. And the reason I do that is because when I wear glasses, when I wake up, I can't see. I don't have a sleep problem, though. I can fall asleep pretty easily, and I sleep pretty much like a big old log. But there are times when the other things that we've talked about, the stresses and the anxiety and things are going on for us or something, and that I don't sleep well, but I can almost always go to sleep. And, of course, exercise is a big thing as well. What do you do before you go to bed, Shell? Do you have any kind of ritual or anything to get ready for bed?
Infrequently, yeah. I mean, I do try to exercise for a few minutes. I got myself a rebounder a little while ago, and I like doing that just before I go to bed, and just when I wake up in the morning, it tends to get me, it helps in both, getting me going and in getting me shut down. So I like that. I'm a little inconsistent with it right now. I'm trying to become more consistent, because the times that I do it, I do have better sleep and then better functioning when I get back up. I do suffer from restless leg syndrome. I had restless leg syndrome before it was a diagnosis. I've had it for like 30 years. A lot of it from some of the injuries to my lower back. I have some. I have a couple of bulging discs and a herniated disc in my lower back. So that's basically where my restless leg syndrome comes from. It's from, you know, from pinched nerves and that kind of stuff. I don't have appropriate circulation in my legs sometimes. So I had actually, that used to cause terrible insomnia for me because I couldn't fall asleep while my legs were in that state, and I suffered from that for years. I didn't remember until you just said that, though. But, yeah, that is something that keeps me from falling asleep. I tried all kinds of stuff. None of the medication worked. Like, I used to put Bengay on my legs. But Hyland is H-Y-L-A-N-D. That's a brand of homeopathic remedies. And they put out a leg cramp cream for calves and feet.
I lost you, Shelley.
Can you hear me?
I can, but describe what the therapy is that you were talking about again, because you cut out.
Okay. It's called Hylands, H-Y-L-A-N-D-S, apostrophe S, I mean. It's called Hylands Leg Cramp Cream, and it's for it's for cramps in your legs and feet. It's all homeopathic. There's no pharmaceuticals in it, and it's it works fantastic. I've told other people about it that also complained of restless leg syndrome. Some of them had gone on some of the prescription drugs for it and didn't like the way they felt, things like that. So I must have told at least.
You're out again. You cut out again. I think you've given that to me, the Hylands cream. I've used that before when I'm having a lot of trouble with my right leg. So I think I used that before.
Yeah.
Are you gone?
Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yeah, I gotcha.
And that really solved that particular issue for me. But I find that if I don't eat near going to bed, if I drink some water and things like that, I will sleep better. I get insomnia when I eat too close to my bedtime. I mean, I can see when I trigger it, and I do get insomnia from time to time. Or if I'm in the middle of something and I'm under a lot of stress and I'm trying to think of a solution for something, I won't shut down. And again, I don't get overly concerned because I realize where it's coming from. And as badly as I want to fall asleep,
you're going again, Shell.
Yeah, I guess I'm in a bad area right here. I'm gonna mute you for a few minutes because I have to step outside my car. So I'm gonna mute for about 5 minutes.
All right. Okay, that's fine. Okay, so one of the other things that they've decided with some of the articles that I've researched, and we're gonna talk a lot about a couple of the biggest sleep medicinal or prescription sleep management that they have out there, benzodiazepines and things like that are really, really harmful to you. really, really harmful. And I pulled off a 4-page thing that's going to stay with my records on all the research that I've done that actually talks about that. We're going to talk about that today. But one of the things that they talk about that actually has better results is cognitive behavioral therapy. There's evidence that cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia is superior in the long term to benzodiazepines and the non-benzodiazepines in the treatment and management of insomnia. In this therapy, patients are taught improved sleep habits and relieved of counterproductive assumptions about sleep. That's what I was talking about before. Sometimes you're different. Oh, imagine that. And that's a good thing, not a bad thing. And if you're not suffering from all these other side effects that we've just talked about, you're probably getting enough sleep. Just because you don't sleep as long as everybody else you know doesn't mean it's not okay for you. Common misconceptions and expectations that can be modified include unrealistic sleep expectations, as in, I need to have 8 hours of sleep each night. Maybe you don't. Misconceptions about insomnia causes, as in, I have chemical imbalance causing my insomnia. Maybe you don't. Amplifying the consequences of insomnia, as in, I cannot do anything after a bad night's sleep. And number 4, performance anxiety after trying for so long to have a good night's sleep by controlling the sleep process. Numerous studies have reported positive outcomes of combining cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia treatment with treatments such as stimulus control and relaxation therapies. Hypnotic medications are equally effective in the long-term treatment of insomnia, but their side effects wear off over time due to our own personal tolerance. The effects of cognitive behavioral therapy, they call it CBT, I have sustained and lasting effects on treating insomnia long after therapy has been discontinued. The addition of hypnotic medications with CBT adds no benefit in insomnia. The long-lasting benefits of a course of CBT shows superiority over pharmacological hypnotic drugs. Even in the short term, when compared to short-term hypnotic medications such as Zolpidem, which is Ambien, which a lot of people use Ambien, CBT still shows significant superiority. Therefore, CBT is recommended as the first-line treatment for insomnia. Metacognition is also a recent trend and approach to behavioral therapy of insomnia. Now, prevention includes maintaining a consistent sleeping schedule, such as waking up and sleeping at the same time. Also, one should avoid caffeinated drinks during the 8 hours before sleeping time. While exercise is essential and can aid the process of sleeping, it's important not to exercise right before bedtime, like what Shelley just says. But here again, sometimes it works for you. If you've tried it and it works for you, do what works for you. Therefore, creating a calm environment before you go to bed is sometimes the best idea. Lastly, one's bed should only be used for sleep and possibly sexual intercourse. These are some of the points included in sleep hygiene. Going to sleep and waking up at the same time every day can create a steady pattern, which may help against insomnia. There's a lot of things out there that are very expensive. A lot of audios, a lot of videos that are out there that you can get offline. Most of them you can do for yourself instead of spending all that money. I think the thought process of people making things like that was nice, was a good idea, but isn't necessary. So if you're struggling for a better balance in your checkbook, as well as a better balance in your sleep pattern, don't invest in all those things that are out there, because really quiet, dark, relaxation. And I know a lot of people who sit up in bed and read to fall asleep. I don't think that's a bad thing. I do, however, think it's not good to sit up in bed and use your computer. Whole different set of downfalls with both of those things. Reading a book, you're reading a piece of paper. Looking at a bright screen on a computer. I mean, I know people years ago, somebody that I care very much about, many, many years ago, who started using a computer way before most of us, their eyes are burnt from the screen on the computer. I, for instance, fall asleep to a television every night. If I'm really having trouble sleeping and I'm really anxious and I really need a good night's sleep, I turn off the TV. But what they're talking about is using your bedroom. Don't use your bed as an office. Don't use your bed as a, as where you do your exercise or anything like that. Use your bed for sleeping, or like they said, for extracurricular activities with your partner. So, first thing you got to do is make your bedroom the place that you need it to be so that you can get a good night's sleep. Second thing is you have to be smart about what you do a couple hours before you fall asleep at night. One would be, I also know for a fact that if you have sweets before you go to bed, not only can they not allow you to sleep, but they can produce horrific nightmares, which is also a part of your sleep pattern being interrupted. So try not to eat anything before you go to bed. No caffeine. I mean, if you're one of those people who can do whatever you want to do and go in and slam the pillow and you're asleep and you wake up, you know, you go to bed at 11 o'clock and you wake up at 7 the next day, you're good to go. You can do probably whatever you want to do. But I'm talking about those of you that are really struggling and this is making you incredibly depressed because you're not getting enough sleep. First of all, get some help at a sleep clinic. If you can't do that, then maybe and you don't have a partner that's with you, let somebody spend the night with you. Years ago, my girlfriend, who we've been friends since we were 16, hadn't been in the same bedroom together in, 25 years. And I went on a trip and she met me there. I was on a business trip. And the first night in the hotel room, I was like, oh my God, how do you get any sleep? And she says, what, do I snore? And I said, honey, you don't snore. You sound like a train. And when she went home, she went to a sleep clinic and found out she had sleep apnea. And she never went again the rest of her life. She's gone now, but for the rest of her life, she wore the apparatus for sleep apnea every night to get her sleep. And she suffered from depression her whole life. So that was helped by that. So if that's maybe something you need to do, do it. Another thing a lot of people take before they go to bed because they think it's going to calm down anxiety and help them relax is antihistamines, such as Benadryl and things like that. And you can get it without a prescription, and it's used in a lot of cases as a sedative. And it can be a heavy-duty sedative for some people, especially if you're not in the habit of taking anything like that. It can really knock you out. I have a personal story about that, too. I woke up one day, and I don't know what I got into, but I sneezed, and I sneezed, and I sneezed, and that was when I was driving a long ways to work, and I got off the turnpike, stopped. I was sneezing so much I had no makeup left on my face. Both eyes were itching in my tear ducts. If I could have gotten a fingernail inside my eyeball, I would have done that. I stopped and got Benadryl, took two Benadryl. By the time I got to work, I had to go lay down in one of the rooms because I couldn't hold my eyes open. It was like, oh, my God, it was like being hit over the head with a mallet. So be careful with antihistamines. And don't abuse them either. Because any of these kind of things are really, really going to put you in a state where you can't function anyway. So, and that kind of sleep, by the way, is usually not good, healthy sleep. You know, you're supposed to have the kind of sleep that is not induced by drugs that the rest of your body has to handle. So it's just not as good for you as trying to figure out. Now, Shell, I don't know whether you could hear when you put us on mute, but they do talk about too much exercise before you go to bed because, as you know, a lot of people get up in the morning and exercise to get their motor going. And often if you overdo exercise before you go to bed, that's what you do to yourself it's hard for you to fall asleep.
Yeah, I was talking primarily what I do is maybe a 15-minute routine. It's on the rebounder, which is what's neat about rebounding is, like I said, it can either get you going or help you shut down. It's it helps for lymphatic drainage and things like that, so it's great to do just before you're going to bed because that's when your body is kind of doing a cleaning house anyway, and it kind of helps that process. But I don't do, I'm not talking about like a two-hour routine where I'm lifting weights and stuff. I do a lot of stretching and a little bit of rebounding, and and that will also help with my restless leg, by the way. Generally, when I am more consistent, I notice that my restless leg syndrome is either a non-event, it doesn't happen, or it's much less in intensity. But when I go several days in a row without doing stretching and a little bit of exercise, and like I said, it's a very low-impact routine, you know, maybe some squats, some lunges for my legs, doing a little bit of work with my arms, but it's a very short routine, like I said, about 15 minutes. But if I go several days in a row without doing it, then my restless leg syndrome really gets very aggravated. I'll have to get up and I'll have to put the cream on my legs just to be able to fall asleep. Or to stay asleep, but sometimes I'll wake up a couple hours later because of my legs, and I have to get up, and that's when it's a little bit more distracting, when it actually wakes me up several hours later, and I can't fall back asleep without going in, and here I'm all groggy, and I got to sit there and put this stupid cream on my legs. So, but at least I'm happy that I found that cream because it's a great way to take care of that particular symptom. It's completely homeopathic, so
right,
I know I'm not.
Right,
I
remember you used it a lot, especially back when your back was bothering you and you were using a cane. That was many years ago, but I can remember when you used that a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the other thing is that I also, I mean, I know a lot of people, my mom suffered with severe insomnia for years, and she had been given a prescription by one of her doctors, and it just made her feel awful.
I lost the show.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Okay, I guess Shelley must be going through some rough areas. She's on her way to work, as most of you know. After antihistamines, the next choice is often benzodiazepines. And I know from personal journeys with different people that I met at Hippocrates, people that I've known privately, benzodiazepines can be incredibly dangerous to you. And they are often prescribed. They're used also for depression and things like that. And they're called sedative hypnotics. And they actually put you in a zone, so to speak. And when you use sedation like this, there's motor impairment, there's respiratory depression, there's amnesia. It's send you searching for other things to keep you sedated. So it's just as bad as getting hooked on any other kind of drug. And it comes under all kinds of names most of them I can't even pronounce. But I will say this, most of them end in AM. Flunitrazepam, Trilzalam, Florazam, Midazolam, they're all, almost all of them can lead to tolerance, which means that you become immune to them, physical dependence, and if you try to get off of them, there's a withdrawal syndrome that can be pretty bad, especially if you've been using it for a long time. They can induce unconsciousness, actually worse than sleep, as they promote light sleep while decreasing time spent in deep sleep. A further problem is with regular use of short-acting sleep aids for insomnia, daytime rebound anxiety can emerge. Benzodiazepines can help to initiate sleep and increase sleep time, but they also decrease deep sleep and increase light sleep. Now, that sounds like a tongue twister. In other words, it takes away your body's ability to go into the kind of healing, nourishing deep sleep that most of our bodies require, and lets you sleep light as a feather and awaken easily and never get the kind of healing deep sleep that your body requires. Although there's little evidence for benefit of benzodiazepines in insomnia and evidence of major harm, prescriptions have continued to increase. There's a general awareness that long-term use of benzodiazepines for insomnia in most people is inappropriate, and that a gradual withdrawal is usually beneficial due to the adverse effects associated with the long-term use of benzodiazepines and is recommended whenever possible. Now, I know a lot of people that are taking the different benzodiazepines, a lot of them. And most of them were put on them by doctors. So that doesn't make it right. We've talked about this before. It doesn't make it okay. And you see that in the end, it's not going to fix the problem. And it's going to create many, many others. There are non-benzodiazepines. Such as Zolpidem, I don't know, Zeleplon, all that start with Z's or have Z's in them. They're a class of hypnotic medications indicated for mild to moderate insomnia. Their effectiveness at improving time to sleep is slight. However, there are controversies over whether these non-benzodiazepine drugs are superior to benzodiazepines. These drugs appear to cause both physical dependence, psychological dependence, and though they're less than traditional, they can also cause the same memory and cognitive disturbances along with morning sedation. In other words, when you wake up, you feel like crap. So, and then, of course, there's antidepressants, and there's, there's a myriad of those as well. And so many people we know are on some kind of an antidepressant. And these can also decrease your sleep pattern. And these can also, if you get into a rhythm, if you will, of being awake during the day and sleeping at night and getting a fairly decent night's sleep, every time you take something to enhance one of those things, first of all, there's no GPS on a pill. Does everybody get that? No GPS on a pill. So when you put it in your mouth, there's nothing that tells it where to go to fix the problem. So when you take it, what you're doing is letting it touch, in some case, maybe benefit, unlikely, but maybe benefit something, but more than likely hurt all the stops it makes through your body. Pills are very, very seldom the answer, and I think we're getting that with this whole report. Now, there's also melatonin, and that's a hormone, but it's a synthesized hormone, and it releases it's released by the pineal gland, and it's secreted through the bloodstream in the dark or commonly at nighttime in order to control the sleep cycle. Evidence for Remeltion looks promising, and then there's another one that they've been able to increase sleep with the melatonin rhythm shift with no negative effects the next day. But all of this stuff is still out there being examined by the FDA, and they haven't decided whether there's risks yet. Well, you can, like I said, you can pretty much know that there's going to be risks. Studies have also shown that children with autism or any kind of spectrum disorder, learning disability, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, and other related neurological diseases can benefit from the use of melatonin. This is because they often have trouble sleeping due to their disorders. For example, children with ADHD tend to have trouble falling asleep because of their hyperactivity, and as a result, tend to be tired most of the day. Children with ADHD, then, as well as other disorders mentioned, are given melatonin before bedtime in order to help them sleep. The sleep cycle regulates for these children when given the melatonin supplement. So maybe melatonin does have a worth, but from everything I've just read, the only place it looks like it really helps is autistic. And maybe ADHD. But again, every time you make, if you have an autistic child, first of all, God bless you, because that's a difficult journey. And if you have a child with ADHD, bless you, because that's a difficult journey. But the more things you add to their life that band-aids or hides or confuses their body, in my opinion, for what it's worth, is a mistake. So before you do any of these things, try to really, really, really understand what it is you're doing. Really, really understand it. You should be doing that for yourself, and if you have a child with problems like that, you should be doing it for them. As I said, pills do not have GPSs. They will not automatically go to whatever is wrong with you. Alcohol, there's one of my all-time favorites, is often used as a form of self-treatment of insomnia to induce sleep. However, alcohol used to induce sleep can be a cause of insomnia. Long-term use of alcohol is associated with the decrease in NREM, stage 3 and 4, sleep, as well as suppression of REM sleep and REM sleep fragmentation. Frequent movement between sleep stages occurs with awakenings due to headaches, the need to urinate, dehydration, and excessive sweating. Glutamine rebound also plays a role, as when someone is drinking, alcohol inhibits glutamine, one of the body's natural stimulants. When the person stops drinking, the body tries to make up for lost time by producing more glutamine than it needs. The increase of glutamine levels stimulate the brain while the drinker is trying to sleep, keeping him or her from reaching the deepest levels of sleep. Stopping chronic alcohol use can also lead to severe insomnia with vivid, vivid dreams. During withdrawal, REM sleep is typically exaggerated as a part of the rebound effect. I think everybody, if you've ever drank in your life, can hear how true that paragraph rings. Of course, they kind of analyzed what I would call a hangover, and it can be pretty bad. And if you are struggling with alcohol addiction, chances are you go through all those things on a daily basis and you get up and have another drink so that you don't have to deal with them. Hence, we have Alcoholics Anonymous and places like that to be able to help. It is a true disease in our world today. Now, there's alternative medicines or what people call medicines in herbs. And I know a lot of massage therapists who use chamomile and lavender and valerian. And then, of course, I know a lot of massage therapists who use cannabis as well and hops. And there's a lot of other things that are out there that can be used in regard to relaxing you. None of them have long-term effects, none of them. And there's an interesting survey that was done that I'm going to share, and then we're going to talk about one of the biggest medicinal ways of helping with sleep that there is out there, and that's Lunesta, which has the beautiful commercials on TV. A survey of 1.1 million residents in the United States found that those that reported sleeping about 7 hours per night had the lowest rates of mortality, whereas those that slept for fewer than 6 hours or more than 8 hours had higher mortality rates. Getting 8.5 or more hours of sleep per night increased the mortality rate by 15%. Severe insomnia, sleeping less than 3.5 hours in women and 4.5 hours in men, also led to a 15% increase in mortality. However, most of the increase in mortality from severe insomnia was discounted after controlling for comorbid disorders. After controlling for sleep duration and insomnia, use of sleeping pills was also found to be associated with an increased mortality rate. In other words, every time you screw around again with all these different medications that we're talking about, you're enhancing your chance for a shorter life. And if you're not getting enough sleep and you are suffering all the side effects that we talked about in the very beginning, you need to go get some help. It's not something, I hope everybody doesn't think that I'm trying to get you to ignore these things. I'm asking you to get the right kind of help, the right kind of guidance in order to get yourself to a better place. And there are a lot of young people that suffer with this as well. There's a National Sleep Foundation. It was founded in 2002. Sleep in America poll showed that 58% of adults in the U.S. experienced symptoms of insomnia a few nights a week or more. Although insomnia was the most common sleep problem among about one half of older adults, 48%, they were less likely to experience frequent symptoms of insomnia than their younger counterparts, who go all the way up to 62%. And their symptoms were more likely to be associated with medical conditions, according to the poll of adults between 55 and 84. So it all depends on who they study, obviously. We know that. We get that. But it also depends on what your lifestyle is. So there's a lot of controversy out there. And if anybody out there would like, I've already talked to a few people, but they're not in a position to call in the morning for various reasons. But a lot of people struggle with disruption of sleep patterns, and it's a part of life. I guess what most of the articles I read are trying to explain to us is that there are extremes that mean you have a real problem. Then there are irregularities in what's going on in your life, which will upset your sleep pattern. I hope you already know that without me telling you that if you're having a bad time, if you've got a kid in the hospital or you can't pay the mortgage or the electric's going to be shut off, you're probably not going to sleep very well that night. So if those things are happening to you, then the sleep patterns mean you're pretty normal. It means that you just can't fall dead asleep when you got all this on your plate. So my suggestion to you would be to try to work on those things during your waking hours. At night when you fall asleep, say, now I need to sleep. So tomorrow I can finish working on everything that's going on in my life. It does you no good to lay in bed and fret about it. Believe me. All it does is rob you of the opportunity to get some mind rest and body rest, which you really, really need when you're going through tough times. So I know that's easier said than done, but sometimes if we say things to ourselves and really, really swallow it and get it, it can happen for us. You are much stronger than you know, and you are in charge of your own self. Remember the man in the mirror. Now, I looked up the medication called Lunesta. And I love their commercials with the little butterfly flying around and all this kind of stuff. But I got to share this with all of you because it's really kind of scary. Lunesta is truly a drug. It's called, I'll probably mess this one up too, Ezopiclone, E-S-Z-O-P-I-C-L-O-N-E, and it treats insomnia. And as far as its drug class, it's called a non-barbiturate hypnotic. And the uses of this medicine is to treat insomnia. It belongs to the group of medicines called central nervous system medications, depressants, which are medicines that slow down the nervous system. Now, let me say to you, does that or does that not sound scary to you? Does it not worry you that you would take something that messes in any way, shape, or form with your nervous system? You realize that we're all electric, and that nervous system is like the wires in your house. If something messes with the wires in your house, like a mouse or something, everything gets screwed up. So let's start with that. Helps you to get to sleep faster and sleep through the night. In general, when sleep medicines are used every night for a long time, they may lose their effectiveness. In most cases, sleep medicine should be used only for short periods of time, usually 7 to 10 days, and generally for no longer than 2 weeks. I know people that get 90 a time. 90 is 3 months. So that's nothing like 7 to 10 days. Okay. This medicine is available only with your doctor's prescription. Yes, I know. Your doctor will tell you how much of this medicine to use and how often. Your dose may need to be changed several times in order to find out what works best for you. Do not use more medicine or use it more than often than your doctor tells you to do. Do not take this medicine immediately after a heavy meal. Swallow the tablet whole. Do not crush, break, or chew it. This medicine works quickly. Do not take your medicine until right before you go to bed. Some people might need to wait until they are in bed to take the medicine. Wow. This medicine should come with a medication guide. Read and follow these instructions carefully. Ask your doctor or pharmacist if you have any questions. Ask your pharmacist for a medication guide if you do not have one. Now, you know, for me, of course, this has always amused me anyway. No matter what you take that requires a prescription, the writing material that goes with it is often incredibly scary. And you think to yourself, oh, my God, am I really putting this in my body? This sounds like it might be a mistake. But you usually take it anyway. Why? Because the man in the white coat told you it was a good idea. So you do it. We can be very easily manipulated if we trust somebody. This medicine should only be used when you can't sleep. You should not need a regular dosage schedule. Okay. So then that 7 to 10 days, just, you know, that just flew out the window, because that means that if on your first day you need it, but your second day you're exhausted or you drank too much or whatever the case might be, you fall right to sleep, you don't take it that night. But I'll bet anybody that's out there with a $50 bill that somebody who's on Lunesta, no matter what they did that day, they take that pill every night. Anybody want to take that bet? Probably not. Shelley, did I lose you again? Because I see that you're, are you here?
No, I'm here. Can
okay.
you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Well, they talk about storage, and if you're taking these kind of drugs, you should let your doctor know if you're taking anything else over-the-counter medicine, including vitamins or herbal products. Make sure your doctor knows if you're also using Rifidin, which is an antibiotic medicine, and all of these are antibiotics and fungus drugs and things like that. If you got something else going on, you know, a lot of people that have skin inflammations and or maybe even candida, things like that, they're taking some of these other things. And if you get a prescription for Lunesta, they have to know if you've been taking sleeping pills from over-the-counter or any kind of Benadryl or anything like that that's an antihistamine or any kind of narcotic pain relievers or sedatives. And you can't drink while you're using this medicine. Make sure your doctor knows if you're pregnant or breastfeeding, if you have kidney disease, liver disease, lung disease, depression or anxiety problems, or if you have a history of alcohol or drug problems. Let me tell you, I'm going to skip over some of this because it kind of makes me sick to my stomach. Because it's like, oh my God, how in the hell is this going to be good for me if it causes all these side effects? Just how is it going to be good for
me? I know.
But here's the summary. And this is scary all on its own. Possible side effects. Call your doctor right away if you notice any of these side effects. Abnormal thinking or behavior, anxiety, aggressiveness, confusion, depression, dizziness, burning while urinating, change in how much or how often you urinate, fever, chills, cough, sore throat, body aches, lightheadedness, fainting, numbness, tingling or burning pain in your hands, arms, legs, or feet, rapid weight gain, swelling in your hands, ankles, or feet, seeing, hearing, or feeling things that aren't there, severe diarrhea, severe pain or bleeding during menstruation, thoughts about hurting yourself or somebody else. Now, we're down to 2 minutes and something, but I got to tell you, you know, is it worth not getting a full 8 hours sleep? So first of all, spend the money on this, go to a doctor, spend the money, do all the things that they want you to do to be able to get this prescription to begin with. Altered or bad taste, decreased interest in having sex, depression, sadness, agitation, difficulty in coordination, dry mouth, nausea, increased thirst, enlargement of breasts in males. That's what every guy's going to love. Headache, memory loss. All of these things. Go ahead, but you're cutting out.
I'd like to say, because we're almost done with the show, is that I do have a couple of recommendations. I think we need to do a part two to this show. Because I do have a couple recommendations that I've had great results with, and people that are in my family and a couple other people that I know have had great results with that are non-pharmaceutical, that are extremely effective, and it might be something that some of your listeners can try to see if they're already taking some of these prescriptions. They might be able to wean off of them and wean on to these other things that don't have side effects. So I think it might be a good idea to do a part two to this show because it's a very, very expansive topic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we will. I think Thursday morning we will continue this conversation because there is more. But I need to let everybody know I got a call from Boca and I have to take Spike to the doctors tomorrow morning at 6:30. So we will not be on the show tomorrow morning. I apologize. I don't let him go to things like that by himself because he doesn't remember a damn thing the doctors say to him. So we will be in Boca Raton. They're going to check and see how his kidneys look and how the stent looks in his aorta. So it's a 7-hour office visit or hospital visit. So wish us luck and keep him in your prayers and keep me too, so, you know, my sanity stays at least where it is now, which isn't real good, but it's better than not having any sanity at all. So I want to wish all of you a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful day. Have a great day. The sun is shining out there. It's going to be a hot one, but stay cool, and we'll talk to you Thursday morning. Bye, everybody, and God bless. Bye, Shell. Thanks, honey.
Bye, Reen. Talk to you soon.
All right, dear. Bye-bye.